This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
David Bowie is on Joy 94.9.
Bowie. This is Sonia for Sci-Fi and Squeam here on Joy 94.9. It's all about the Bowie. Part of David Bowie is something that we don't get very often and we may never see again, all collectively arriving on the footsteps of Melbourne town. It's one of the biggest exhibition and events that we'll probably will see for such a long time about the man. The chameleon, the musician, the alien, whatever you like to call him. And I have the wonderful Dr. Liz Giuffre on the phone to us in Sydney Town and talking to us about something she's involved in coming up this Friday, the 17th of July, 2:30 p.m. It's called Covers and Collaborations. So welcome.
Thanks, Sonia.
Good to talk to you. And what's your background and how did you connect with the Bowie?
Well, I'm an academic, my day job, but my day job used to be as a music writer. So,
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I kind of came across Bowie, as you do, being a little music fan down the front. And then I was first kind of given an assignment to review a best of, I think it was. And I was sort of, you know, young and fresh-faced, went, who is this guy and what's going on? So, and my kind of first proper brush with Bowie was when he was here for the reality tour. I think it was in 2004, and I got to go to the press conference in Sydney, and what really struck me was how kind of reverent everybody was, and you know, and obviously you can understand why. It's kind of big, kind of, it's like this sort of spiritual experience being in the same room as the man. And what struck me was that he was actually, you know, he was really funny and really kind of unassuming and quite kind of daggy almost. And so that's what I'm talking about when it comes to this conference. I'm talking about his comedy cameos and how he kind of, it's laughing with Bowie, not at him. And I know that I've got to be very, very clear about that because I think I might step on a few toes, you know. I don't want to make fun of Bowie or make fun of anybody's love of Bowie. But I just was so struck by how somebody who is so awed, and of course that's what the symposium is showing too, is that, you know, how in awe of him we are, fits so well into specific kind of comedy roles. So in particular, I'm looking at, I don't know if you've seen Zoolander, which is, gosh.
Oh, yes.
But he made the most wonderful cameo in that, where he was judging the walk-off.
Yes, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I'm talking about that, and also he was in Extras.
Yes, I was just about to say, Extras.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was hilarious too.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, he is so funny, but what makes him funny is that he's absolutely straight, serious Bowie. You know, he's not, even though at that press conference and in little interviews since, he does crack jokes and he does, you know what I mean? He's got quite a good sense of humour as a person. Mm. What makes them work in that context is that he plays the most serious version of Bowie he can, you know?
Yeah, he's got that black humour and he understands irony and all those things that I guess
absolutely
makes him English. It's a very English perspective. It's pretty, you know, it can be pretty cruel as well, but he seems quite self-effacing, so, you know.
Well, I think he's also not scared to, you know, I mean, and if you know, I hadn't really thought about it as being a particularly British thing, but I think you're right. I mean, you know, if you compare him to, say, an American cameo where they have to kind of steal the show and, you know, do something different, he kind of doesn't do that, you know. He stays in Bowie character, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So for Zoolander, he's judging the style and he's got to be, you know, right down in there when they have the wedgie off. He gets in there, you know, between Zoolander's legs to really make sure that wedgie's up there, you know. I mean, that's just attention to detail, you know.
That's just like, that's upsetting and at the same time extremely amazing and surprising that he would, you know. I mean, you're like, he's like a godhead and people are, you know, they don't feel worthy around him, but I think he takes the piss and just brings, it actually elevates him more, believe it or not, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's clearly in on it. Like, he knows the construction, you know, and he knows that it's, he knows what that kind of role is too. And of course he does, because he's one of the few artists that make a point of creating their personas. You know, we know them, Ziggy Stardust and the Thin White Duke and all that. He's actively created characters for himself in a lot of ways. So it makes sense that, you know, he'd be willing to create them in comedies for us too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like the Tea Party and the Mad Hatter's in charge, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
But he's very clever, very clever. Now, for the panel that you're on for the symposium, there's also, they're talking about a lot of different music and things. Is anybody going to be doing Flight of the Conchords or?
Well, I'll talk about it a little bit. That was beautiful,
sorry.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll be talking a little bit about it because, again, it's that difference between when other people make fun of Bowie or when other people use him as a punchline, if you like, as opposed to Bowie getting in there and being part of a new thing.
Yes.
So I think that was the thing with Flight of the Conchords. I know Jimmy Fallon did a T-Bowie thing for a while, and there's all those memes going around. I love the one that's Bowie done up as Jareth from The Labyrinth, and it's just it's a meme that says, David Bowie knows what you do when you zoom in on his tight pants, you know, all of that kind of crap.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're all, but you know, they've all got a life of their own too, so they're fantastic. Yeah, so I'll talk about them a little bit, but I'm more looking at, exactly him getting into new contexts and doing something new.
Yeah. I mean, what is the standout for you as far as the way that he does show his persona? Do you think, what's the...
Yeah, look, the Extras one really struck me because, and I'm not sure if you've seen it, but basically it's an episode where Ricky Gervais's Andy has a bit of a artistic crisis because he feels that he's had to be compromised and he's put together a sitcom that, you know, is lowest common denominator, and he hates it and the public hates it and everything. So there's this mock little bit where he goes to Bowie to kind of ask for artistic guidance, you know, and Bowie just starts singing, you know, Fudgy Little Fat Man, like just makes a song. out of Ricky Gervais's, you know,
it's just hilarious.
Desperation, yeah. And what's so beautiful about it is he's so committed to it. You know, so one way you get this amazing bit where you think, Jesus, this man can make music out of any old crap, you know. And on the other side, you sit there and you think, oh, my God, this is so ridiculous. How do you do it with a straight face, you know? And what's really wonderful about it, too, is on the Extras for Extras DVD, there's a little bat behind the scenes. He does an interview where he then talks about having given Ricky some jokes for some subsequent episodes, you know, and explaining to him how comedy is done, and it's totally deadpan. It's just wonderful. So that's on YouTube, actually. It's worth having a look at.
Have a look at that. I haven't seen the Extras of Extras.
Oh, it's great. It's so good. And again, it's just proof that he absolutely knows what he's doing, and what's so funny is that he's not trying to ham it up, but he's funny by being as serious, you know what I mean, as serious as he can be.
Well, I think after such a career as he's had, amazing career, I mean, you've got to laugh, don't you? He must be thinking this is hilarious some of the time.
And that was the thing that kind of got me way back at that first press conference. It was. Everybody else was so kind of, you know, can you tell us about, you know, your inspiration here and your inspiration there. And he was just having a day, you know. He was just playing with people and saying g'day, and, you know, Glenn A. Baker was there with his silly hat on and he goes, oh, nice hat, mate. You know, all that kind of stuff, you know, that just, you kind of forget humor's the bit that makes him human, you know, and the bit that kind of draws him human. And also, too, he's got to know. It's a bit ridiculous, you know. He's got to wash those Ziggy pants, you know. He's got to realise there's a strange part to it all, you know. So,
I think he was, earlier in his career, I think he was very, you know, serious, I suppose you call it, about his, you know, his style, his music and his life and perceptions people had of it. But I guess that was because it was such a groundbreaking thing he was doing.
Yeah.
And no one was doing it and reaching that mainstream sort of fever.
Yeah.
There was sort of definite fever going on with his,
absolutely,
his work.
Whereas now
I think he can enjoy those past merits and not just laugh at it all. Why not?
I think you're right. And also, too, obviously, when he was kind of breaking that early ground around, say, you know, his gender bending, and then, you know, when he came out as homosexual or bisexual or whatever the quote was at the time, of course I can understand why you want to keep one line there, because it is that fine line. The moment you invite humour, people can laugh at you rather than with you. And I can understand why at that time when that was such an important battle to have in order to break ground, I can understand why he didn't want to have any grey areas there. You know what I mean? Mm. So that makes perfect sense. And I think you're right. Now that he's in that point of his career where he's like, look at you, you know, look at me, look at how successful I am. You know, now he can afford to play back with the audience, you know?
Yeah. I think you're right. Make it his own, and
absolutely, yeah.
Why not? I mean, absolutely. Enjoy it after all this time. I think perhaps after he had experienced a heart attack too, it may have just chilled him a bit. You know, the seriousness of it all.
Yeah,
awesome. So, if you had to, I'd do this to everyone. It's mean, but would you pick a song or would you pick a moment in film or television? What would you be your favorite Bowie moment?
They're hard. How have other people done this? Have they cheated and said, oh, well,
they may have cheated. I don't know. They could be lying to me.
Well, see, I've got a soft spot for The Man Who Sold the World. And that's just because that was one of those kind of awakenings. I first heard it, as lots of people did, you know, just generationally via Nirvana, and then went, oh,
yes, hang on. Right. What's the original? Shit, you know? Yeah.
That's it. And then sort of hearing how Bowie has now reclaimed it and kind of given credit back, and how it became, that song was such a rebellion for Nirvana because they were on MTV Unplugged, the absolute most mainstream of mainstream things, and they dug themselves this hole they couldn't get out of. And so they went, well, how do they do it, stuff you without, you know, saying that? They went, well, we'll just take the best music ever, but basically is saying, look at you guys, we've totally sold out, you know? So for me, which is what Bowie did way back in the day when he's on the front of that album in a frock and just, you know, saying, I've kind of done it all, but I've sold it all out. Like, I just love the complexity of it. And it's an awesome tune too, you know?
Oh, yeah, awesome, it's very amazing. Yeah, I was watching last night on repeat, YouTube repeat, the Lulu version.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, from 1974, and Bowie does the background vocals.
Oh.
So he's in complete control of her. He's even dressed her up to look like Bowie.
Oh, my goodness.
And the video is hilarious.
Oh, wow.
But it's really, like, hits you, and you go, gosh, this is pretty weird, but it's really good. And it's got more brass in it than the original. So it's got a lot of brassy saxophone, you know, sort of style. It's very interesting.
Oh,
so,
cool. No, I'll have to have a look at it.
He's done some interesting collaborations.
Well, I mean, on those too, something like I'm Afraid of Americans that he did with Trent Reznor was pretty awesome as well on that. Was it the Earthling album?
Yeah,
that
I
one.
So.
Again, all came through around that time. And that, again, you're like, how has Bowie even heard of Nine Inch Nails, let alone pulled out this amazing stuff, you know?
Yeah, so. And even the videos are like,
oh, crazy. You know,
so his collaborations have been, I mean, there's probably so many collaborations that stand out over the years.
Yeah, well, the other one that I've spent some time looking at is The Labyrinth. So when he collaborated with Jim Henson on, you know, all of those Muppets and stuff, and he was really, really active in collaborating with them to create that character and to make sure that it was a character that would fit into the world without taking over the world, you know. So it was really, really a careful choice, and between the two of them really making sure that it was kind of, it was dark enough to be believable, but it wasn't too dark to be too scary, you know.
So they pulled it off.
Absolutely.
Whereas perhaps not so much with something like Absolute Beginners, or you didn't quite do it, maybe.
Yeah. But, you know, and he had all these tin machine moments too. But, yeah, I mean, but the great thing too is any artist has got to give it a crack, don't they? You know, and the bigger risk you take, the higher you fall. But I've got respect for somebody that's willing to say, okay, I've done that, let me try something new, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty amazing the influence and many, many artists and musicians take from that. So
absolutely. Yeah, now, I mean, we wouldn't have people like Lady Gaga, you know. We wouldn't have people like Katy Perry. We wouldn't have, you know, people who just really experiment and try and, you know, really, yeah, just, or even just, you know, aren't scared to write a good pop tune, you know, but take it really, really seriously, you know. So,
like The Laughing Gnome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Serious song. So he had the comedy. He had the comedy right back from the beginning. I mean, that was 1967.
Yeah.
So
it's coming full circle,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that stuff's interesting too, isn't it? Because it's kind of, you can tell that he wants to kind of play around, but he's kind of working out where the joke's going to land, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
So, and I think that that's the thing that's so great now by the time he's come full circle, is that now he knows exactly, in Zoolander, it's Bowie, the style god. Therefore, let me come in and be God that comes down and says, I will judge this, you know. And then it's the music God that can come out of everything for extras and say, all right, I can make a song about anything, even little Ricky Gervais over here, you know.
It's so diabolical, really.
Yeah.
We are his playthings.
Absolutely.
And I guess a lot of people, judging from the David Bowie is exhibition and events coming up, a lot of people don't mind being played with by Bowie.
God, no,
In fact, most people surrendering to the manipulations that he has, because it's incredibly manipulative.
Absolutely. Well, he's extremely charming too.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the thing that it wouldn't work if he wasn't charming, you know. And he's,
I think its intelligence comes through, you know, the intelligence and the daring and the foresight to see that there's something going on here, is a gap to fill. And he did take it probably as far as it could go.
Yeah. There's one other thing I really love about Bowie that, if you have time, I have to tell you, he cannot dance. That's what I love about him. Have you seen the white man dance that he does?
No, I haven't.
He's such a terrible dancer. Have a look. Mm-hmm. Anything, probably, he does them in lots of them, but if you go back, for the Queen special just after Freddie Mercury died, there was a whole big tribute where lots of people did the different versions of things.
Oh, yes.
And him and Annie Lennox did a duet for Under Pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes out in this magnificent big ball gown with like this painted on mask and whatever. And there's a bit in the middle where they try and dance, and she's making these magnificent moves, and he just looks like a 65-year-old uncle. It's hilarious. And he does that white man dance all over the place. It's just
I'll have to look that up.
But you just are so daggy when you dance. It's great. You
can't be good at everything.
No, the Achilles heel, that's it, I reckon.
Or the twist of the platform. When I think about it, yeah, he doesn't really need... Maybe that's why he went more for the costume and the look.
Maybe.
To avoid the dance.
Excellent. To distract from it. Excellent. We've cracked the code. We've got to practice for next year.
Oh, I'm just waiting for the helicopters to land on the ceiling here. And
oh, no.
Take me away.
Don't worry. They're not going to let you to the airport, are they?
That's right. You still got to fly here.
That's right.
Better be careful. Look, it's been fantastic speaking to you about more Bowie stuff. It's awesome. And covers and collaborations on the Friday the 17th. Everything kicks off at 8:30. It's really early, isn't it?
I know.
It's not fair, because you're arriving on Thursday. You won't be able to. You won't have a late night, I'm sure.
Oh no, I'd be a very good girl. Absolutely.
Because you got to get up early. Oh no, you're not until 2:30, so you don't have to.
Yeah. I'd have to be there to, you know, turn up and get my name checked off and everything.
Oh yes. All right. Then it will be 8:30.
Yes.
With the cue of excitement and
that's right.
You know, awesome. Yeah. And for covers and collaborations, that looks great. About the celebrity of Bowie, really.
Mm.
Very good. Mm. Well, thank you very much, Liz. It's just so good to speak to you, Liz Gouffray.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
And keep listening to us here on Joy 94.9 as we delve more into the Bowie questions. You're listening to Sonia here on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to the special podcast about David Bowie.
It included many of the folks who were at ACMI and the David Bowie Is forums and exhibitions, held only in Melbourne until November 1st, 2015. We hope you enjoyed this. We'll have more podcasts to come.
Thank you for listening to the special David Bowie presentation by Joy 94.9.
Interviews helmed by Sonia Hammer from Sci-Fi and Squeam and Queer Geeks of Oz and Geek Girls Speak for Joy 94.9. Enjoy this podcast.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au.
Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.